brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 088-11-3-2014. Let's roll into article number one. 2014 Marijuana Midterms to establish 2016 as the most crucial year for cannabis. Take it away.
Source: The Brookings Institution. By John Hudak. Editor's note: as part of the 2014 midterm election series, experts across Brookings will weigh in on issues that are central to this year's campaigns, how the candidates are engaging those topics, and what will shape policy for the next 2 years. In this post, John Hudak and Philip Wallach examine the marijuana legalization initiatives on the ballot this November. In addition, Hudak and Wallach will be hosting a Reddit AMA on the topic of marijuana legalization on Wednesday, October 29 at 10 o'clock AM EDT. Ever since Colorado and Washington voters decided to make unprecedented policy experiments with legal recreational marijuana in 2012, there have been two big questions: what will the effects of legalization be, and will other states soon follow in their footsteps? We have each provided some very preliminary answers to the first question: Hudak's Colorado report, Wallach's Washington report, but the 2014 midterms will be the first big test for the second. Voters in Oregon, Alaska, and the District of Columbia will weigh in on whether their states should become second-wave legalizers, with each confronting slightly different choices. Oregon's ballot measure 91 would very much follow in Colorado's footsteps, NLY, with even lower taxes. Like Colorado, Oregon developed a fairly robust regulatory system for its medical marijuana system that it proposes to convert to broader recreational purposes here by bringing honesty to a system in which medical often deserves scare quotes. Measure 91 would allow home grows up to 4 plants and non-commercial exchange, while giving the state's Liquor Control Commission broad discretionary powers to define the regulatory and licensing parameters of the state's commercial market. Unusually, it does not offer a chemical definition of a marijuana DUI, instead launching a research effort meant to provide recommendations to the state legislature at the beginning of 2017, Section 7-4. Most notably, Oregon's system would feature low taxes assessed on the basis of weight, as $35 per ounce. That is less than in Colorado, and, more importantly, far less than in neighboring Washington, leading some observers to wonder whether Oregon's recreational system would end up effectively starving Washington's in spite of prohibitions on cross-state diversion. As legalization has taken off in other states, concerns arise over whether tax rates are too high to move people from the illegal market into the taxed and regulated legal market. Oregon's efforts seek to remedy those concerns for Oregonians. The low taxes apparently make Oregon's brand of reform MWAD more regulation-oriented than the state's failed ballot measure 80 in 2012, but still quite industry-friendly, a favorite of legalization advocates. Alaska voters will decide on ballot measure 2, which is similar to Oregon's measure 91 in many ways but is less detailed and features a somewhat higher tax of $50 per ounce. Alaska's legislature is invited to create a new marijuana control board, but if they do not, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board is tasked with creating regulations and a licensing scheme. Again, like Colorado, Alaska's legalization would allow home grows up to 6 plants, 3 flowering at any time, and non-commercial transfer alongside the regulated commercial system. Unlike Colorado, however, Alaska has little in the way of an existing regulatory framework around their medical marijuana system. The state relies wholly on home grows and caregivers for the production and supply of marijuana to the medical market, and Alaska's possible foray into recreational marijuana will require the state to design, develop, and implement regulations anew. The scenario presents a challenge for Alaska, and the state would be well served to work closely with other recreational and medical marijuana states to learn best practices, an effort in which legalization supporters have already been proactive. Washington, D.C. DCS Initiative 71, hailed and denounced, respectively, as legalization by both its supporters and its opponents, is really just full decriminalization. DCS Council already made possession of small amounts of marijuana a ticketable infraction with a fine of just $25 through a law earlier this year, but the ballot initiative would go even further, removing any penalty for possessing small amounts or making non-commercial transfers. But Initiative 71 does not, by itself, create a fully legal commercial marketplace or institute any taxation system, refraining from these tasks because of the limitations of the district's ballot initiative process. Should Initiative 71 pass, Hitch polling, indicating nearly 2-1 support, indicates is overwhelmingly likely. T will raise two questions. First, what will Congress do? Congress has ultimate jurisdiction over all of the affairs of the district and could act to reverse full decriminalization, although doing so would require bipartisan cooperation and so seems unlikely. Such a legislative veto would run counter to recent congressional action that relaxes federal marijuana enforcement and numerous proposals to extend federal tolerance further. In a new Congress ND1 in which both chambers may be controlled by Republicans, here are likely to be many other policy initiatives prioritized ahead of restoring marijuana prohibition in D.C. Second, will the D.C. City Council immediately move to implement a tax and regulate system comparable to Washington's or Colorado's through legislation? David Grosso at large has sponsored a bill to do just that, creating broad regulatory powers for the Alcoholic Beverage Regulation Administration and imposing an excise tax of 15% on recreational and 6% on medical marijuana sales. Grosso's bill would divvy up proceeds between D.C. police, youth camps, youth courts, and prevention programs administered by the D.C. Department of Behavioral Health. But it isn't clear exactly how fast the council could implement the new system, given the peculiarities of DCS legislative process. Similar to challenges faced by Alaska, the DC system will suffer from limited, pre-existing experience in marijuana regulation and will likely need to learn from other states in constructing its new system. So, what can we expect at the ballot boxes next week? Polling suggests a real chance that all three proposals may pass, with Oregon and D.C. quite likely. Such moves come in the midst of political elites and the public at large slowly changing their orientation on the issue. In both states and the district, legalizers are better funded than opponents. That monetary advantage and a sense of momentum created by Colorado and Washington's experiences favors legalization. But the nature of midterm electorates, which tend to be older, more Republican, and more traditionally conservative, makes legalization a heavier political lift than in a presidential election year. Looking at it a different way, as Hudak did in August, causation might also run in the opposite direction. Marijuana legalization may help Democratic candidates in an otherwise poor year, with potentially enormous results through the Alaska Senate race. In the end, regardless of what voters in Oregon, Alaska, and the District of Columbia decide on November 4th, we can expect the legalization movement to expand and for 2016 to be the most crucial year for cannabis in the United States.
Article number 2, for marijuana, a second way for votes to legalize. Take it away.
Source, New York Times. By Kirk Johnson. 2 years after voters in Colorado and Washington State broke the ice as the first states to legalize sales of recreational marijuana to adults, residents of Oregon, Alaska, and Washington, D.C., will vote next week on ballot measures patterned on those of the two pioneers. People on both sides of the issue say these initiatives could determine whether there will be a national tide of legalization. A changing political landscape has weakened anti-marijuana efforts. As the libertarian movement in the Republican Party has gained force, with leaders like Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, supporting decriminalization of marijuana and others going even further, an anchor of the conservative opposition to legalization has eroded. And Democrats have found that supporting legalization once an invitation to be labeled soft on crime no longer carries the risk it once did, as public discussion of prison overcrowding and law enforcement budgets has reframed the issue. National groups that have long advocated legalization have provided labor and money, along with help from a legal marijuana industry that did not exist in 2012. The old anti-drug coalition has struggled to find traction and money. Supporters of legalization have outdone opponents fundraising here in Oregon by more than 25-1, and in Alaska by about 9-1. The support coalition is definitely broader, and the opposition has splintered, said Corey Cook, an associate professor of politics at the University of San Francisco who follows the marijuana debate. The contrast between the pro- and anti-legalization forces was apparent on a recent day in Oregon. In downtown Portland, scruffy hipsters with clipboards buttonholed passers-by, registering voters and urging them to vote yes on Measure 91, while political consultants put the final touches on a $2 million ad barrage. Nearby, opponents organize one of their major events in Kaiser, a suburb of Salem, the state capital. Titled Marijuana and Our Youth, the session included 2 hours of PowerPoints and passionate denunciations of the drug. But no one even mentioned Measure 91. Audience participants and organizers, many of them from government-funded non-profit groups involved in drug treatment services, were afraid of violating laws that ban politicking with public money. Opponents were, by their own admission, late in forming a united organization, and their campaign had only about $10,000 for advertising, with spots running on 2 Portland radio stations starting last weekend. "They've done a pretty good job of shutting everybody up," said Joshua K. Marquis, the district attorney in Clatsop County and an opponent of legalization, referring to the pro-91 forces. "The pro-legalization campaigns in Oregon and Alaska are financed largely by national organizations. In Alaska, 84% of the $867,000 raised by legalization proponents at Yes on Ballot Measure 2 has come from the Marijuana Policy Project, a group based in Washington, D.C., with an advisory board that includes actors, musicians and politicians, including Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate for president in 2012. Opponents to legalization in Alaska have raised only $97,000. Continue reading the main story. In Oregon, the Drug Policy Alliance, based in New York and backed by the billionaire investor George Soros, has led the charge, contributing at least $780,000 this year, according to state records, making up about 35% of the cash raised by the main committee supporting legalization. Marijuana-related businesses or investors in Colorado, Washington, and California have contributed at least $60,000. Contributors included Open Vape, a company based in Denver that sells products for consuming concentrates like hash oil; Privateer Holdings, a marijuana investment firm in Seattle; and Vicente Sederberg, which calls itself the marijuana law firm. There has been some well-funded opposition to legalization, especially in Florida, where voters will decide whether to become the first state in the South to allow marijuana for certain medical uses. There, Sheldon G. Adelson, a casino executive from Las Vegas, has contributed $5 million to opponents of medical marijuana, about 86% of the total raised by the main committee fighting the legislation. But in Oregon, there has been no sugar daddy, as Mr. Marquis, the county prosecutor, put it. Opponents have raised only about $179,000. Initiative 71 Inches Washington, D.C., would allow residents to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana for personal use and grow up to 6 cannabis plants at home. Measure 91 Inches Oregon would allow possession by adults of up to 8 ounces of marijuana and 4 plants. Ballot Measure 2 Inches Alaska would allow adult possession of 1 ounce and 6 plants. Supporters of legalization in Oregon and Alaska said that money was crucial to overcoming what they say was years of incorrect information and distortion by law enforcement and anti-drug groups about marijuana's risks. The opposition made good traction for 50 years, and it was built around locking people up. "A massive industry was built around it," said Richard Branson, the entrepreneur who founded Virgin Group and a member of the Drug Policy Alliance's International Honorary Board. Opponents said they were facing, for the first time, an emerging industrial complex. "This is not about independent Alaskans smoking marijuana in their homes, but a commercialization and industrialization of an industry," said Charles Fedulo, a spokesman for Big Marijuana Big Mistake, which opposes Ballot Measure 2 Inches Alaska. "Change is required for the meeting about marijuana and youth here in Kaiser," opponents of legalization say, offers a case study in the tough new tactics of pro-legalization groups. A few weeks before the Marijuana and Our Youth meeting, legalization supporters pointed out to federal and state authorities that a small drug treatment center funded by government grants was sponsoring a tour of the state by Kevin A. Sabet, a co-founder of a national anti-legalization group, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They reminded all parties that federal and state laws prohibited the use of public funds to influence elections. the state of Oregon agreed and issued a stern warning that any group receiving public money, a list that included 70 counties, tribes, schools and nonprofit agencies that provide drug treatment or substance abuse prevention programs, had best tread carefully. The result was a sudden silence in the anti-drug contingent and a muted meeting here in Kaiser. Even though private funds were substituted to avoid the appearance of impropriety, talk of Measure 91, organizers says, was taken off the table out of concern for jobs and future government grants. A central constituency in the opposition, heavy on healthcare professionals, was stifled. Both sides said the new terrain offered a glimpse toward the next wave of states, notably California, where supporters are gearing up for a vote in 2016. But there are strange historical echoes, too. Alaska and Oregon were both pioneers of marijuana law in the 1970s. Oregon's legislature debated full legalization in 1973 and ended up passing the nation's first law decriminalizing possession of small amounts. Alaska's Supreme Court held in 1975 that possession of marijuana in one's home was protected by constitutional privacy law. Whether the anti-drug coalition of the past is dead or just sleeping, both sides agree that the old arguments no longer work. Today's parents are yesterday's children who were smoking marijuana and have personal experience, and, therefore, the kind of advertisement which shows fried eggs doesn't really cut it with them, Mr. Soros said in an interview this year. He was referring to an anti-drug television campaign that showed a sizzling egg in a pan and the tagline, "This is your brain on drugs." But the pressure is also on proponents, they say, not to fall short, because every new state is a kind of test case. If we win, I think it shows that public opinion has decisively changed. We've won in two election cycles, said Peter Zuckerman, a spokesman for New Approach Oregon, the main group supporting legalization. If we lose, I think it becomes much harder, he said. We have to maintain the momentum. Professor Sabet, of the Department of Psychiatry in the College of Medicine at the University of Florida, founded his anti-legalization group with Patrick J. Kennedy, a former Democratic congressman from Rhode Island. He said in an interview that on the surface, the fight against legalization probably looks unwinnable here. It looks bad. I want to be on the other team, he said, laughing. Turning serious, Professor Sabat said that experiences in Washington and Colorado were exposing flaws in legal marijuana, from greater exposure to young people to questions of highway safety that he thinks will turn off many voters, even though opponents of the ballot measures lack the money to shout their message. Legalization in practice has been the biggest enemy of legalization, he said.
Article number 3, Cannabis to be Wonder Drug of the 21st Century. Take it away.
Gwimplin.com. By Chris Curran Dombrowski. I began to study cannabis while an undergraduate at the University of Southern Mississippi and, 38 years later, there are academic textbooks on the endocannabinoid system that show we all have endocannabinoid receptors in our brains. All of us. If you were aware and knowledgeable about the neuroprotective effects of cannabis as I am, you would realize that it is immoral to deny NFL football players the right to consume cannabis. Cannabis is not a performance-enhancing drug. Football is a violent sport with recurring concussions and head trauma running rampant that over time results in chronic traumatic encephalopathy, as well as the week-to-week musculoskeletal trauma, contusions, sprains, strains, etc. Most NFL players live in a great deal of pain on a daily basis, and cannabis helps with that, compared to the opioid painkillers, which are highly addictive. With the lawsuits of former players who have suffered concussions and their resulting byproducts, memory loss, suicide, relationship difficulties, the league should make a serious effort to understand the growing evidence in cannabis's potential to diminish the long-term effects of brain injuries. Google cannabis and prevention of long-term damage associated with acute and chronic brain injuries. Roger Goodell said on January 23 that the NFL will consider medicinal cannabis as the evidence continues to reveal that cannabis helps concussions. Educate and open your eyes by Googling the medical benefits of cannabis. Over 640,000 results will appear in 0.47 seconds. Google the endocannabinoid system. Cannabis and its relationship to chronic pain, PTSD, anxiety, stress and chronic insomnia. The list goes on and on. The power to choose has been handed to us registered voters on a silver platter by an astute legislature. to expect those in the criminal justice system and politicians, those who have no training in clinical pharmacology or basic medical science, those who cater to fear, calamity and eventual collapse of society, to make progress in regards to the broader issue of the fear-based and totally failed war on drugs precludes that the community must take initiative. The trends in the U.S. bears this out. Henry Van Dyke, an author and Princeton University professor, once wrote, "Time is too slow for those who wait, too swift for those who fear, too long for those who grieve, too short for those who rejoice. But for those who love, time is eternity." Allow me to restate what I wrote 14 years ago: cannabis will be to the 21st century as aspirin was to the 20th century, a wonder drug. The time is fast approaching. Come November 4th, we will have the opportunity to vote yes on the Joaquin Casey Concepcion II Compassionate Cannabis Act of 2013.
Alright, that's all I have for this episode. Till next episode, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your mind. Now, go pollinate the world.